Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, June 6, 2024. This is our second of three cases set for oral argument via Zoom. We will have 15 minutes, and the case number is A23-1483, State of Minnesota versus Jacob James Simmons. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes or rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. There is a clock in the marshal's box there indicating how much time you have, so please be cognizant of that. We are conducting this via Zoom. We appreciate you joining us via Zoom. It will be live streamed, and it also will be recorded. There will be an audio recording of this. However, no other recordings of this are permitted. And if we do run into technical difficulties, we will try to address them as quickly as possible to make sure all the parties have sufficient time for their arguments. And without counsel for appellant, you may begin. Please state your name for the record and your party you are representing.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan McIntosh. I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Jacob Simmons. And this case centers on a traffic stop on April 18th of 2022. And we are asking the court to reverse the district court's determination that reasonable suspicion of a traffic violation justified the traffic stop in this case. I want to look at two broad areas here. First being the factual findings that the court made underlying its decision, and secondly, the legal basis underlying the violation that the court found under Minnesota Statute Section 169.18. Under the factual findings that the court made, there are three areas that we really want to focus in on. The first is the distances that the court found based on the officer's testimony, the vantage point of the officer compared to the in-squad camera, and third, whether the video corroborated or, under our position, actually contradicted the trooper's testimony. The court first looked at, in terms of the distances involved here, the court made a finding that the officer observed or said he observed the actual lane violation from a half mile away. We assert that that's clear error here because the officer's testimony was that from the half mile distance, he actually could not see the tires and the lane line distinctly, had to accelerate to his estimate of half that distance before he could ever see the actual tires and the lane lines before he could, in his testimony, actually see that there was a violation. It's a very different case here if he says, well, I saw the violation at some point, just not picked up on video. That point at which the tires and the lane lines are visible is clearly shown on this video. And the trooper here, Trooper Elwood, simply could not and never did identify during his testimony when he believed that violation occurred.
Let's assume that's so. I'm trying to frame correctly what our appellate process is and how we approach, what's the scope of our review. So the officer testified, and I'll just quote here from his testimony, "What I saw was the vehicle in front of me in the right lane had moved over to the left and far enough to where it appeared to have crossed over the center line." Now, your argument is that it didn't cross the center line or touch the center line, but reasonable suspicion is a really low standard. So, does it really matter whether the vehicle touched the center line? If the officer says, "It appeared to me from my vantage, it looked like it moved over far enough from my position, it looked like it touched the center line." Why isn't that enough reasonable suspicion that a traffic offense had occurred to stop and investigate further? Even if it's not enough to prove the crime or the violation beyond a reasonable doubt, why isn't that enough for a reasonable suspicion to stop and investigate the potential for a traffic violation?
Well, I think in this case, Your Honor, it gets to the specifics of what the officer said. And I agree with you that he did make that initial statement. And I believe you're probably looking at somewhere in the area of pages 7 to 9 of the transcript. He does say that that was an initial observation that he made from this half mile or so distance. But he also says, I couldn't see the line or the tires and the line distinctly. So I had to move forward. I had to accelerate and catch up to this officer. So at that point, when he's making that initial, we believe that's much more in the line of a hunch or a whim. He's saying, well, maybe there's some reason for me to go check this out, but he's not observing any type of violation at that point.
Well, let's assume nothing else happened. Let's assume he never saw a violation, not that he saw nothing more. And there, that ended the testimony. Why isn't that, since we're looking at this from an objective, reasonable officer standpoint, not what this officer did, but what an officer could have done at that point, why isn't that enough for the officer to have made the stop? It was far, far enough to where it appeared to have crossed over the center line. So now he wants to investigate further. Now, what the officer does is he moves closer. But did the officer have to move closer? Why wouldn't that be enough for the officer to conduct a traffic stop by itself? Why is that not reasonable suspicion to investigate the possibility of a traffic violation?
Well, there'd be no more if he stopped solely on that basis, there's nothing else to investigate unless the driver would confess that he crosses
the line. It was just reasonable suspicion. Hey, I'm sorry, I pulled you over. It looked like, from my vantage point, that you might have gotten over to the center line. Did you? That's an investigation.
My answer to that, Your Honor, also is that the case law that I have found, and I know Your Honor wrote the decision in the sushi case, so that's part of this case law as well, is what's been required is for the officer to see that the tires have entered onto that line, because it is such a small margin of error. We're talking about a 4-inch wide.
Well, that's enough. That gets you probable cause that a violation has occurred. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about in this case is there enough suspicion as communicated by the officer to stop a car? What if the officer would have come in, a different officer, not this one, because we're talking about a reasonably objective officer, and testified in the omnibus hearing. At that point, I wanted to stop the vehicle to investigate further whether there had been a violation. Wasn't sure. I was going to ask the driver, did you touch the center line? I mean, it may be an unusual investigation. It may seem like a pretty silly thing for an officer to do, but we're talking about reasonable suspicion. And what the officer is allowed to do is to investigate even minor offenses. If the officer can stop for a minor offense, the officer can investigate a minor offense as well.
Yeah. And my response on that is twofold, Your Honor. The first is, as I said before, the officer's testimony kind of removes the idea that he thought he had reasonable suspicion, because he believed he had to go forward and try to see
that's,
the tires.
And that's the point I'm concerned with, that what we're talking about is the subjective understanding of the officer when a reasonable suspicion analysis removes the officer's subjective motivation and it puts in place an objectively reasonable officer. What could an officer have done with the information that this officer had? That's our question, isn't it, for a constitutional analysis, not what this officer thought?
It is, but under the facts of this case, it's not objectively reasonable from the distance he was at, where he cannot see the tires or the line, to determine that there's a violation. And secondly, the district court did not make a finding of fact that there was a violation at that initial observation or that initial juncture. The only finding
that's why I'm asking about a different officer, not this officer, but the objectively reasonable officer who says, you know, I wasn't sure. It seems to be what he's saying here. It appeared to have crossed the center line. So from my vantage point, let's say an officer says, look, let's say he's more specific. From my vantage point, I couldn't see the tires, but I'm looking at the other side of the vehicle and the lane, and it looked to me that it drifted far enough over that it touched the center line. Why isn't that enough to investigate whether the center line had been touched? And if it had been touched, as you point out, the case law that I'm involved with, enough for a violation.
So I'm suggesting that no reasonable officer, if they can't see those tires cross over that line, would have a reasonable suspicion of this particular violation.
But counsel,
And
it seems like you're assuming that the officer could not see, and the officer did testify that he did see a violation. And I mean, I understand your argument of, you know, the distance and which distance was it? Was it truly 3/4 mile, 1/2 mile, 1/4 mile? But the fact of the matter is you had an officer who thought they saw a violation, sped up to get closer to confirm whether or not the driver actually was crossing the center line, and then upon the second observation did see him and testified that he did see him cross the line. As Judge Ross said, we're just looking at reasonable articulable suspicion. We're not talking probable cause. And reasonable articulable suspicion is a very low threshold, and case law has made that very, very clear. Why isn't that enough to even putting aside the body cam, or the camera in the vehicle, why isn't that enough? I mean, that's what was done for decades before we had dash cams in police cars.
And I think it is a strange twist here, because without the camera and the officer just says, this is what I saw, and the court says, I credit that and I find that believable, that's a credibility determination. There's very little to do about that.
So why isn't that enough here?
Because there's objective evidence here of the camera, which is showing the lanes and the tires at the point where the officer sped up and could see them. And there's no violation determined. In some of the cases, it's dark and there's inconclusive. It simply is not shown what the officer says that he saw. And so,
well, this goes to the second argument that you said you were going to touch on, as the vantage point of the officer versus the dash cam. And it seems to me that if the officer is to the left of the dash cam and the violation is of the center line, that the officer is going to have more of a direct line to be able to see whether or not the tires actually did touch the center line versus the dash cam, which is going to be off to the right and at an angle that it may not be as clear as to whether or not there is indeed a violation.
And looking at the district court's findings, they're true. The officer is obviously in the driver's seat, but the court also found that a higher vantage point meant more reliability, because the court said neither the eyes nor the camera are inherently more reliable. And the court was simply mistaken, believing that it was a dash mounted camera versus a mirror mounted camera, and was making the decision that a higher point of view, or at least that's part of the analysis here, was more reliable. But in fact, here, the camera is actually the higher vantage point, which arguably gives you more of a perspective as it's pointed, you know, slightly downward towards.
Well, isn't what really matters is that the officer's vantage point is necessarily different in some degree, slight or large, from the camera. And the officer testified. I mean, the tough thing here is we're asked to do this sometimes, and maybe you can help me in how we should approach this. We're asked to review factual findings the district court made when there's a videotape, and we can all look at the video. But when it comes to clear error, I mean, we're not the fact finders. The video is just evidence that the district court has to interpret. And the district court interpreted that evidence in this case to find the officer credible. You're asking us, it seems to me, that we should weigh the evidence differently from the way the district court weighed the evidence, which is an approach we don't take under our standard of review. Correct my thoughts if you can.
Well, but this court can, if you find that the finding, including a credibility finding, is manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence or is not reasonably supported, you do have the authority to undo those findings. And we're suggesting that where there's a video that picks up the same point that the officer was saying that he had to accelerate to, meaning where the wheels and the lane lines are completely distinct, if that video doesn't show the violation that the officer suggests, then a finding that he's credible in his description that he observed a violation is just manifestly contrary to the weight of that evidence.
But that goes to the point that Judge Ross made, that the fact of the matter is you have two things that are have different vantage points. The officer's vantage point is different than the camera's vantage point. And if the camera, which upon review, it has limitations of its own, of not being able to even, you can't even read signs as you're going by when a human driver can obviously read them, that the signs are designed to be read by people. But if the district court found the officer's testimony credible after having reviewed the camera footage as well, I'm struggling as to how we can overturn that credibility determination of the district court saying, I found the officer's testimony of what the officer saw credible.
And I think I have to relate back to the actual, because I think the court was wrestling with those exact issues of, if neither I nor camera are inherently more reliable, what factors will I as the district court look at to tip this balance? And part of what the court used was a higher vantage point, believing that the officer was at a higher vantage point and could therefore see more clearly. But that was an error, and that I think the state acknowledges that was error, when in fact the camera was at a higher vantage point, which makes would make then, by the same logic, that more reliable. So there's just a mistake there. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. If I can just finish that thought.
Yes, you may.
There's just a mistake there made by the district court, but it's critical here because that was truly the point, or one of the points that the court used to tip the scales of reliability here. And that is inherently part of the credibility determination.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may begin.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brent Carlson, deputy city attorney for the city of Rochester, and I represent the respondent, state of Minnesota, in this case. As the court is aware, this occurred back in April of 2022, about 12:46 in the morning. As Judge Ross indicated, the reasonable articulable suspicion standard is really low. And case law has made clear that a violation of a traffic law, even an insignificant one, is sufficient for an officer to initiate a traffic stop.
Well, my questioning of Mr. McIntosh was actually different from the argument that you present in your brief. And the case law is pretty clear. If there's even a minor traffic offense, an officer can make a stop. And in most of those cases, what we're talking about is an officer having probable cause to believe that a violation has occurred because the officer observes the violation. So my question is different in this case, and you didn't make the argument that I was alluding to, so I'm wondering whether perhaps I'm out over my skis on this one, which is that an officer doesn't need probable cause to make a traffic stop if the officer has reasonable suspicion to investigate. The officer can stop, even to investigate a traffic offense about which the officer is not certain. Now, correct me if you think I'm wrong, or the premise to my question is wrong. And it's not an argument that you made in your brief, but maybe it's because you believe I'm it's too much.
You know, I don't necessarily think I disagree with Judge Ross. And as we discussed earlier in Mr. McIntosh's argument, you know, the trooper initially saw what he believed or apparently appeared the vehicle moved to the left. And I would just note that it's dark out and we're dealing with a white SUV, which is, you know, there's some contrast there. So the officer, you know, again, I think the court can take the totality of the circumstances here.
No, but I want to get to the legal question that I'm raising. I mean, is it too much? I mean, the officer says, I think there might be a violation, so I'm going to drive closer to investigate by observing the car. Did the officer have to do that? Could the officer have done something more at that point, stopping the car to investigate rather than driving closer to the car to investigate? Does the law allow him, is he prohibited under the Fourth Amendment to stop a car before he actually observes a traffic violation? Or if he has reason to suspect that a violation has already occurred, can he stop the vehicle to investigate the prior violation? rather than investigate for a future violation?
I guess, in all candor to the court, I think that may be taking it a little too far. I haven't thought about things in that context. I would just note that in the appellant argues the Birkeland case, and in that case, the court found that there was not reasonable articulable suspicion because the court had found that the driver or the appellant may have crossed the lane line. So here it kind of seems like maybe may and apparently are synonymous with one another where there wasn't actually a violation. However, I would fast forward here a little bit and argue that Trooper Elwood actually did see a violation, and quote, in his testimony, he indicated that he could see the tire lane, he could see the tires and the lane lines and where they were in relation to one another.
Well, can you deal with it then? I think then you have to address the credibility issue that's been raised, which is the district court believes there's a vantage point, there's an advantage to a vantage point that is higher than lower. The district court believing there was a dash cam, the officer's vantage point being higher from the driver's seat. The district court was, I think you concede, wrong as a matter of fact, that indeed the vantage point of the camera was higher than the officer's eyeball live vantage point.
And I did concede that in my brief, and I agree with what Judge Reyes said, where, you know, the trooper was lower and to the left than the angle of the squad camera. So we're dealing with we're dealing with not a fog line, but a center lane divider line violation here. The left tires touching the left line. So respondent argues that the trooper was in a better position to see the violation than the squad camera could capture. And there are certain limitations to the squad camera. Clearly, the quality is not great. It is grainy. One cannot read the traffic signs. There is a row of businesses on the north side of Highway 14 that cannot be, you can't tell what type of businesses those are. As the trooper got closer, you couldn't even see if there was a license plate, more or less read the license plate on the vehicle. And while it is true that the trooper testified that he could not pinpoint exactly when on the squad video the violation occurred, he did clearly testify that the tires, and I quote, the tires on the left side of the vehicle drove onto the center lane divider line, that they drove onto, not may have, not could have, but that they did. And respondent's argument is that is a violation of Minnesota Statute 169.18. Case law makes clear that the lane is the area between the lane divider lines, excluding the lines. So any portion, even a fraction thereof, of the vehicle crossing onto the line is a violation and is sufficient for the trooper to initiate a traffic stop. Now, while the trooper indicated that the precise point of the violation may not be seen, clearly seen on the squad video, I think one can fairly say that it is clear, and the district court found this, that the vehicle was much closer to the lane divider line than it was to the fog line. So I do think the squad video corroborates what Trooper Elwood testified as to the vehicle moving towards the lane divider line. Again, it's a grainy video, but I think the court has to find the trooper to be credible. Remember, this is a trained trooper that is out on patrol working the 6 p.m. or working.
Would your argument be the same? Let's assume the facts were exactly as they are, but we had a crystal clear dash cam video or squad car video, let's say it's mounted in the same place this officer's camera was mounted. And it's crystal clear. And the arguments that appellant raises are the same in that hypothetical as they have been in this case. What is the authority for this court? How would we review the factual determination by the district court? Do we look at the evidence on our own and say, you know, it's the district court was wrong? The district court was basing its finding not on the video, but on the officer's observation. Now, if the district court had said the video shows X, then we can review for what the video shows. But let's assume it's not the case. And as was this in this case, the district court's finding rested on the officer's observation. What's the state's position as to how we review a district court's finding in that case about what the officer observed if the camera shows clearly that let's say in the hypothetical that there's no place in the camera view where the tire touches the center line?
So I think, Judge Ross, what you're asking me is whether or not, I guess what this court's rule is, if the video were to actually show the violation. And again, I think...
No, I'm saying, what if the video does not show the violation? How does our clear error review work in that setting when the officer says, I saw the vehicle touch the fog line or the center line, and the point at which I saw it covers the same period that the camera depiction would cover, and we don't see it in the view, and it's a clear view, crystal clear, high definition, and the district court credits the officer. What do we do in our clear error review in that circumstance? How does it work?
Well, I think obviously the findings of fact of the district court will be upheld unless they are clearly erroneous. And I would argue that if the video, which is objective evidence, is objective evidence, if the video were to be clear to show all aspects, there wasn't, weather or glare, if it wasn't truly clear, I guess I would think this court would want to rely on what the video showed,
you're saying in that case, we would overrule the district court's credibility determination, relying on the officer's testimony.
So the court is still saying that the court found that the officer was credible.
Yes.
Okay.
So the district court's not basing its fact finding of what happened on the video, but on what the officer said. But we have a video which contradicts or may appear to contradict what the officer said. What is our role on appeal under our clearly erroneous standard?
Well, as with anything, I think it's or it is this court's prerogative to get the decision right. So I would still say I think I understand the question now. I think officers are trained, deferring to their training and judgment is important. However, if a video is clear and clearly shows something different and there are no other intervening factors, I think it may be appropriate for this court to find that there was clear error and rely on the video in those instances. But that's not the fact of the matter is that's not the case before the court today. The video is, in fact, quite grainy. And again, the officer is trained to detect these types of things. He went through in the testimony what his training consisted of. And I would also note that in appellant's brief, they really focus on this with safety piece of the statute. And I would just note that if appellant is going to argue that maybe there was a de minimis violation here, even if there was, that there was no safety concerns by virtue of the fact that it was the center line versus the fog line. And I think that argument is just sort of misplaced because part of appellant's argument is the fog line. You go past the fog line and you're going to hit a ditch. Well, if you go past the lane divider line, you're going to hit another lane and then a ditch. And I would note, while there was no other traffic in the area at the time, there was one other vehicle in the area, and that was, in fact, Trooper Elwood. And so there was another vehicle in the area, and whether or not appellant knew that it was a squad car at the time, maybe not. But the fact of the matter is there was actually another vehicle in the area at the time of this violation. And I would also note for the court that anytime someone is going to be departing from a lane, Minnesota law has a requirement that somebody use a turn signal. And at no point in the video did we see appellant use a turn signal, not until after the stop was initiated. So for all of those reasons, I would ask that this court find the district court's findings to be credible, that in fact, reasonable articulable suspicion for this traffic stop did exist based upon the testimony and arguably corroborated by the video, that appellant did in fact cross onto the center line on this particular day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. We will now turn back to appellant's counsel. You will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal arguments, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do want to hit 2 points here. The first being this argument that the video corroborated the officer. The state is asking this court to find that based on the same piece of video, that the video is clear enough to see that the vehicle was very close to the line, but not over, and that in some way corroborates the officer. But in the same video, when we're not able to see the tires actually go across, that should be discounted, and we just rely on officer credibility. I don't think it can be both ways. And the district court, did make a finding that in the court's view, between that 53 and 57 second mark, the vehicle was much closer. But our point is, if you can see clearly enough to make that determination, how is it possible that you're not able to see, or it's not visible on the video, the actual violation of the tires crossing over? And so,
well, counsel, I interpreted the district court's opinion. It says a review of Exhibit 1 from 53 seconds and 57 seconds certainly shows the vehicle much closer to the center line than the fog line, using the width of the traffic lane as a reference. So I don't think the district court is saying that the video shows a touching line, but it certainly shows that at some point the vehicle was much closer to the center line, and then relying on the officer's testimony that the officer actually saw the vehicle drive onto the center lane divider line.
And so I understand.
I don't think it's necessarily inconsistent. It's just, I think the district court was putting into context that that is certainly where the violation could have occurred.
Right. But inherent in that, I think the court was having to say that the court could distinguish, which it is distinguishable in the video, that the tires were not over the line during this corroboration
period. The district court never said anything about whether the video showed the tires touching the line or not. The district court relied on the officer testimony for that, and just the video to show that at some point the vehicle was closer to the center line.
Understood. And I think in some ways we're saying the same thing, but if the video is clear enough to distinguish the tires and the lines in the 53 to 57 second point mark, then it should also be clear enough to see if there's an actual violation, not just a near violation or being in the lane.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge Jessen.
Speaking of the clarity of the video, Mr. Carlson described it as grainy. Would you agree with that characterization of the video?
I mean, it's evening. I think once the vehicle gets close, the squad vehicle gets closer to the car, it's fairly clear. But all that has to be seen here for the purposes of this matter is Can you distinguish the vehicle tires from the lane lines? It's somewhat difficult because it's a dashed line and it's not a solid area. So if there was a encroachment onto the line, it was just that split second, and we don't know when the officer saw that. But yes, I mean, the periphery is certainly not very clear. For our purposes, though, I think the distinction, and that was part of what I was trying to say not very well in response to Judge Reyes' question, was once he gets close enough, you can distinguish the tires in the lane line.
So could you also just address respondents' argument that, well, even if there were some clearly erroneous facts, reasonable suspicion could be based upon your client's failure to signal his driving?
Yes, the district court made no fact findings or conclusions of law on that point. The state has not asserted any error based on that. The district court did not find a basis to stop under that 169.19. And I think that was also borne out to some degree in the Suchi case that I mentioned earlier, was when the state hasn't raised that issue, or the district court has not found facts, it's incumbent on the state to assert error if they're going to challenge that basis on appeal. If I could very briefly touch on the legal basis here for what we believe should be required to justify a stop here, there are certainly a category of statutes that include both a conduct or a condition element plus safety. And this is one of them. 169.18 says you shall remain in the lane until you ascertain that the movement can be made with safety. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm out of time here. Could I just briefly finish that thought?
You may briefly finish, yes.
So the examples that I'm relying on are with windshield cracks or activating the bright lights. The case law has been clear that just the condition or the fact of those, you know, a cracked windshield or flashing the brights, that is not enough to justify a stop. There has to be either an obstruction of vision in the windshield situation, or an impairment of vision in another driver in the bright situation. And so when the legislature has included that safety element, it's our position that that has to be factored into the reasonable suspicion assessment, and the trooper never testified to any facts about that. So that gets a little bit to Mr. Carlson's point, but the facts in the record do not demonstrate that the trooper gave any information regarding that safety factor. The district court made no findings. That was the reason for the supplemental citation to Berkland. And actually in the Smith case, that was also cited in the briefs, the trooper in that case made an assessment that it was a two-lane divided highway and crossing over placed an opposing driver in danger. And so without that information, even if everything the trooper said is credited and believable, there was not a factual basis for a stop under this particular statute.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. We will be issuing an opinion within the mandatory 90-day timeframe. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.